Hey, folks, a lot to tell you about this coming week. Before we get to that, spread the word around about the podcast. Send the links over to your friends. We have some really great guests that I've been really proud of. John Cleese, Tim Robbins. Last couple of weeks, we got more great guests coming up. So please spread the word. Tell your friends. We want to keep growing our listeners. I got a Valentine's Day gift for you. Me, February 14th to the 16th. I'm going to be at the Philadelphia Punchline doing shows all weekend. Come on out. Bring a Valentine. You know what? Wear something revealing. It's Valentine's Day. Do it for me. You know, preferably women, but the men, I don't need to see that. But yeah, go online to get tickets. Philadelphia Punchline, February 14th to the 16th. My guest this week, great actor, Michael Imperioli. You know him from The Sopranos, Goodfellas, Blue Bloods. He's in a new NBC drama, Lincoln Rhyme, The Hunt for Bone Collector. Really cool conversation with him about acting, what brought him to the project that he's working on now, how he approaches acting in film versus TV, his days working on The Soprano. Really, really wide-ranging conversation. So enjoy it. Tell your friends about the podcast. Enjoy Michael Imperioli. My guest this week, you know him from The Sopranos, also Blue Bloods, Mad Dogs, Californication, and he's starring in a new series on NBC, Lincoln Rhyme, Hunt for the Bone Collector, on Fridays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central on NBC. Michael Imperioli. Hey, Michael, nice to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. So the show is based on the book of the same name, and was there something, were you familiar with the book when you sort of took this on or when you were approached? And do you, when you're working on something that's based on a book, I mean, how much does that influence you as an actor in terms of what a character is sort of, you know, described as or goes through in the book?
To be honest, I first read the script and one of the pilot of the series, and I liked it a lot. I liked the writing and I liked the character. And you know, since it's based on the book, but it kind of is its own thing, as well. You know, it has the DNA, you know, and of the books. But it is a TV show and it's its own thing. So I tend to, in those situations, I tend to really make it from the ground up in terms of my character, but make it real in terms of, I always try to find a real life inspiration prototype and work from there. And that's what I did on this one.
And what was the prototype that you tapped into for this?
A New York detective.
Yeah.
That I know.
Yeah. Oh, someone that you know. Do you, yeah, it's funny, you know, because I was thinking in you're doing in the work, you know, you played Governor Cuomo, and when you're playing somebody who, I know in this case, Detective Salito is not someone that actually exists, but it's based on a prototype. But when you're playing somebody who does exist, who's a real person, particularly a public figure, how do you keep from, even by osmosis, if you happen to have the TV on or you're watching CNN and you see him in your everyday life and then suddenly you're playing that person, how do you struggle not to let what you know, any preconceived notions you have of that person bleed into how you play the character?
Well, and that, for that specifically, I spent time with him and really picked his brain about that case, the prison break in Dannemora, and you know, because that's really what this, my role was confined to, that how he responded to that situation. So I got to talk at length about the prison break and his response to it, why he did what he did, why he responded the way he did, what it meant to him, you know, what were the dangers involved, what did he feel like he needed to do. And he was really generous with his time going into that. But you know, when you are playing someone who is a real person, it's there's a lot more specificity that you have to, that you're required to adhere to. You know what I mean? Whereas someone that you're, you know, that's invented from for this specific project, you have a lot of more leeway. It was great spending time with him and getting to know him. That was the real blast for me for that job.
Yeah, I can imagine sort of being on the inside of a governor running a state. That must have been,
was there anything that, I mean, I don't want you to say anything that you can't, but I mean, like, was there anything in particular where you just, you're like jaw dropped, or you're like, oh, now I see how that works, or that kind of thing?
You know, the level of, it was more, my jaw dropped, I can't say that. It was just really understanding the mindset of, you know, he's someone who's like very hands-on as a governor. Like when something happens, he's there when it's happening that day. And, you know, he feels a responsibility to, you know, the people in New York to do that, you know. He said, you know, it's a response to the times we live in. We live in times where there's a lot of anxiety, you know, over, you know, since 9/11, you know, the vibe has changed, you know, in terms of how things happen and the level to which they happen. And he feels a responsibility to, you know, to his people that he's there for them and that he's on top of these things.
Yeah. Yeah. When you read the script for Hunt for the Bone Collector, what were the basics of the character that existed that you're playing, and then sort of what did you bring to it? Like, what was it that you saw in that character? You thought, oh, I could have fun with this, and I can really run with this, or it can challenge me as an actor.
It was the first time I've really played someone with that level of experience and time in a job. Which is also a function of me getting old, being in my 50s now, you know. So those are the roles I'm, you know, now stepping into. So I've never really quite had that, you know, the veteran, the guy who's really, you know, seen it all and been through it all for years and years. And that was really fun. And then it was figuring out, okay, let's find out what that's really like through someone who's lived it and bring those things together.
Yeah, you know, you see that generally that character of the New York veteran detective a lot in film and TV, and I thought you did a really good job of bringing something new to it. It wasn't sort of, I didn't feel like I was seeing that played the same way, you know, and I thought that was really great. And
thanks.
Yeah. It's you know, I can imagine that's hard when something's played a lot, that's one of the things that you really try to shoot for. You know, this is network TV, obviously, with The Sopranos and HBO, and you know, obviously you've worked in film. Is there a difference in terms of, like, I've always wondered, like, as an actor, not in terms of the language that you can use, you know, network TV, you can't swear or whatever, and HBO, you can, but more like the pacing and the rhythms of shooting. Is shooting with HBO, for example, more like shooting a film, and is it similar to shooting network TV? I'm just curious if you found any differences.
No, I think the shooting is the same. It's more, you know, every job is different, has you know, different elements to it. But I don't find the pace or the rhythm of the shooting any different. You know, I mean, the scripts are constructed a little differently because, you know, there's act breaks in network episodic shows where you know where they're going to break for a commercial, where it's something like The Sopranos. There is no act break. It's just meant to be viewed in a single sitting or whatever, you know, without a break. So the scripts are constructed a little differently, but, you know, for an actor, you just go in and scene, so in some ways it's the same.
Yeah. Well, you're a writer yourself. You have a screenplay, and you have a book out, The Perfume Burns His Eyes, which is set in 1976 in Manhattan. Do you have the latitude with this show to kind of give some input on your character and sort of tweak some of the writing? What is there a collaboration at all like that?
You know, I've only made tweaks in the writing in terms of things that were specific to my role and specific to NYPD procedure that I've learned through my own work. In terms of story and things like that, no, I haven't. Yeah. You know, I don't have the need to, or, you know.
Yeah.
They have heard.
Yeah, and then in the writing side of things, like, what prompted you to start, you know, writing and really immerse yourself and then writing a novel? Like, was this something kind of you always had in the back of your mind when you were younger and you were acting?
You know, I started writing pretty much the same time I started acting, but didn't really finish anything or get anything produced till Summer Sam, which was, I was like in my very early 30s. I've attempted writing books before, novels before, but never really got anywhere. And finally, The Perfume Burner's Eyes was something that I reached a point in my life where I figured out how I could tell it, how I could do it, and found a story that could work as a novel.
Yeah, in sort of reading some things on you, there was something you said there were a couple of things that I thought were really sort of prescient and really interesting. And you talked about sort of Mad Men and Breaking Bad and The Sopranos kind of as examples of in television. Then when those shows came out, that you didn't have to be a big star to be a lead in a show. But you said it's almost like the old Hollywood studio system. You couldn't star in a big movie unless you were a star. It's becoming like that in television. Do you think that ever swings back? And why do you think that happened? Is it because it's getting harder and harder to have movies made? So these movie stars are sort of moving over to TV?
No, I mean, if you look at those three shows, which were really, you know, this kind of anti-hero conflicted characters that really ushered in this big age of TV that we're in now, they weren't stars at all.
Yeah.
Not even, they weren't big stars. They weren't stars. They were unknown to the public, pretty much.
Yeah.
The three of them, they had done work, but to the public, they were unknown. No, what happens is, you know, it became a hit, and those things became hits, and TV kind of took off, and then the studios try to find ways to guarantee that they're going to have a hit.
Yeah.
That's what they did in movies, which one of the ways they try to guarantee a hit is by having a big name in it. So they're trying to do the same thing to television.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at a show like Apple's first show, it's Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon are the stars, you know, whereas maybe 20 years ago, that might have been two unknown actresses. It's just a way of them competing in the market. And it's, I don't think it will swing back.
Yeah. No, it's funny you mention Apple because we have a show that we're pitching for me. And I said to my agent manager, like, what about Apple TV? And they like rolled their eyes. Like they're just doing stars. And I was like, you always hear that. And then I saw the stuff they're coming out with. And it's like, yeah, they're just doing big stars. So we didn't even bother going in. But you know, before we wrap, you know, there was something that you said that I read that was really, for me personally, it resonated, and I think it's really a great way to look at things. I mean, you had such a great career in the business, and you're going to continue, obviously. But you said, just quoting you, I think the problem with a lot of people is that they get a little bit excessive. It becomes like a ladder they have to climb. Like you got to do better, you got to get more money, you got to hit bigger and bigger at the box office. And you said, just do what you want to do, do it well, then immerse yourself instead of trying to design your career step by step. I thought that was, especially for somebody like myself who works in this business, that's a really healthy way to look at it. Did you always have that attitude, or were you sort of early on like, okay, I got to get this next, I got to get this, I got to get this. And then you realized that this is a better way to look at things.
My career, a lot of it in the beginning, especially, was doing what was available to me. You know what I mean? It wasn't like I had 100 offers and I could just pick and choose for years and years when I started out. It doesn't really work that way for most people.
Right.
I mean, you're lucky to get a job, whatever it is. And then, you know, of course, you know, there's certain things you don't want to do. You don't want to maintain a certain level of quality. But yeah, I think that's the danger. I mean, if you're on a hit, especially if you're on a hit series, something like The Sopranos, and if you just start to say, well, it has to be something that is a lead role or is going to pay more or it's going to be a success or you're going to win an award, that's really tricky because those, you know, then you're kind of moving away from, okay, what is the project? Is the project any good? Is it going to be a good role for you? Is it going to be interesting? And I think that kind of messes up a lot of people's careers.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, okay, you know, that's over. We're back to the drawing board. Let's find the next project. When people very often ask me, is there a role you want to play? Is there a show, type of show you want to do? Or, you know, and it's like, I've never thought of that. You know what I mean? It's always just been, okay, what's available to me? What's happening in the world? What projects are casting, and which ones are they interested in me for, and which ones are interesting, you know, interesting to me?
Yeah.
Because I mean, unless you're a big star or a big star right away, you know, where you can basically dictate your own career, you know, if you can green light a project, which very few people can,
right?
You're really, you know, you're at the mercy of what the next job's going to be.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I had Paul McCartney on my show, and we were talking about when they were early on and they hit big, and I asked them where they got the guts to. So, you know, once you have a fan base, that fan base tends to like whatever you put out to be very similar time and time again, whether it's music or comedy or, you know, even roles in acting maybe. But, and I said, where'd you guys get the guts to just change your sound so radically from one album to the next and not worry about, you know, keeping your huge fan base and building and so forth? He goes, we just didn't think that way. He said, you know, we just would make something. He said, okay, we did that. Let's take a right turn and try something else and just, you know, be creative and do stuff that interests us. It was the exact same sentiment. Like, they just focused on the next project without a major plan. And obviously it worked out for them. So
they also had the ability to do that. You know, that's the other thing. Not every, like in their case, right? The British Invasion band, not all of them were probably as talented and gifted enough as those guys to do that. You know what I mean? Just because they came, they had that sound doesn't mean they can do, just because you could do like Please Please Me doesn't mean you could do the White Album. You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of, when you think about those guys, you know, that they all lived in this town at the same time, and which are, you know, three of the great, I mean, in terms of Harrison, McCartney, and Lennon, three of the greatest songwriters ever. Kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And it hit home because I was watching a repeat of George, something like a tribute to George Harrison, and he has so many good songs. And I, from what I've read, he was frustrated in the Beatles at times because Paul and John really focused on their songs, and he's just so gifted and so beautiful. And Frank Sinatra described, I think Something in the Way She Moves Me is one of the best love songs he's ever covered, because it doesn't mention the word love in it, he said, and yet it conveys all of those feelings. And I thought that was an amazing tribute.
True. I never thought about that.
Yeah, I didn't either. It's incredible. Well, listen, I could talk to you all day, but thanks for being back on the show. It's great to have you. Congrats on the new series. You played Detective Salito and Lincoln Rhyme Hunt for the Bone Collector Fridays, 8/7 Central on NBC. And hopefully
thanks
talk
for
to
having
you.
Me again.
Yeah, man. Great talking to you.
All right, there you go. Michael Imperioli, great to have him on. And please spread the word about the podcast. Tell your friends about it. Send some links around. We want to keep building our subscribers. And see you this weekend, hopefully, February 14th to the 16th at the Philly Punchline. Go online to get tickets. See you next week, everybody.